from Connect FM. This is Under Review, your weekly deep dive into the world of sports with Bob Anderson, Dave Glass, and Dave Herzing.
The divisional round featured two overtime games and controversies over refereeing and coaching decisions. We'll recap those games and look ahead to the conference games. Who will be Super Bowl bound?
What's the latest on the Steelers coaching search? Is Mike McCarthy really on the radar? And is Indiana's championship the most surprising in college football history? We'll discuss.
Every team faces highs and lows, but it's got to be particularly difficult to be a fan of the Buffalo Bills. We'll talk to a friend of mine, Barry Batcha, a 30-year season ticket holder, for his take on what went wrong, the Sean McDermott firing, and where the team goes from here. I'm Dave Glass.
I'm Bob Anderson.
And I'm Dave Herzing. Stay tuned as we discuss these topics and more as we go Under Review.
Sponsored by Fetula Eye Care, the Falls Creek Eagles, and Nebraska Plastic Surgery.
On Connect FM, your only local news radio.
Welcome to Under Review for January 21st, 2026. We're actually recording this a day early just for in case any news breaks that we're not on top of. But nonetheless, we're reunited and it feels so good. D's back with us. What's up, guys?
I'm happy to be back. It's great, man. Sorry I had to miss last week. It's things get in the way. Life gets in the way. But happy to be here talking to you guys.
It's our first time all three of us together in a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while, man.
Yeah,
it's
since
been a
before
while
Christmas.
For sure.
I got to attend my first Penguins game this weekend. And I got to say, it's fitting. They lost in a shootout, but had a good time. We actually got to go on the ice afterwards and get a picture as a group. So really enjoyed that. And hey, I don't think we're going to get to much hockey talk tonight, but nonetheless, it's always fun to get out in person to see those games.
Yeah, yeah. For Pens fans, there's a lot of hockey talk to come. There's just too much football tonight, I think.
Well, let's recap the divisional round. We'll go back through each game chronologically. You can give me a talking point, anything you want to discuss from the game. We'll start with Dave. We'll just work our way around the circle for each game. Broncos 33, Bills 30 in overtime. And I got to say, Dave, you texted me towards the end of that game saying, I'm missing a classic. I actually had it up on my phone watching it while I'm watching the Pens game. And it was, I'm glad I didn't miss it.
Well, you know, and again, I got to give a shout out to my son, Darren, who's the biggest Broncos fan around. And, you know, it went from ecstasy to agony really quick for him.
About 10 minutes.
You know, because of the announcement that Bo Nix is out for
what
the season.
Shame.
And, you know, I was rooting for Denver mainly because of Darren. But honestly, and Darren is the one to hear this, if I'd have known that was going to be the outcome, I actually would have rooted for Buffalo.
I know. It ruins the games this weekend.
Yeah,
that
it makes
game,
it tough.
I mean, they could still win, guys, but it makes it a really tough assignment. And you'd like to think that Buffalo would have had a, you know, pretty good chance against New England. New England didn't really look that good. We'll get to that in a minute. But, you know, the thing that gets me, and again, I don't want to take too much of the thunder from our conversation later with Barry, is that I really thought McDermott out-coached Peyton a good portion of that game. I can't put that result really on the coaching at all.
No, I mean, that was a very odd game. Josh Allen, to me, is a victim of his own circumstance. He digs his hole, and then he digs himself out of the hole. Like, it's funny with him. Strange game, but to your point, Dave, it's funny. It's such a shame that matchup, if Nix is there, that's going to be one heck of a...
Yeah, it'd be a fun one,
oh, my
sure.
gosh, yeah. But the line is 5.5. I mean, yeah. I would bet that all day.
Well, if Nix is playing, you got to think that the Broncos are favored for sure.
Maybe
by 2.5
Absolutely.
Or so. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So for me now, like you said, Josh Allen has won 8 playoff games. That's the most in league history by a quarterback who has never played in the Super Bowl. And he'll turn 30 in May. The question is he going to be the Dan Marino of our time?
You know, he very well could be, which is such a shame. You know, although this is what's crazy, though, how the media can spin things. You know, look at what happened with Lamar Jackson and, you know, people piling on him. I don't see the same piling on for Josh Allen. There has to be some blame placed at his feet. Now, granted, he is the best player in the NFL. I realize Stafford's probably going to win the MVP, but Josh Allen's the best player in the NFL right now. without him, that Bills team, I mean, you could say that about a lot of quarterbacks, but still.
More that team, though. I totally agree with you.
Yeah, but it's just, but at some point, when can you start blaming Josh Allen? I mean, it's they would do it with any other quarterback, I guarantee it.
Well, and he blamed himself. And look, he's a stand-up guy, and his team rallied around him, which they should have done, and all that stuff. And I thought everybody from the Bills pretty much handled that the way they should have. But we're on the outside looking in. As far as I'm concerned, he went a long way towards losing that game. I can live with some of the mistakes, you know. Some he's aggressive. The one that I think is unforgivable is the fumble right before the half.
Dear Lord,
I mean,
giving up those 3 points.
Take a knee and go to the half. Yep. My goodness,
what
are
you
doing?
And the way he was carrying that football, Dave, I mean, I couldn't believe it. When you're watching that in real time, I'm like, what the heck's he doing?
Yeah.
And then it's like, wow. And then I'm sitting there thinking, they just gave him 3 points.
You know, I joke all the time all year about how when he puts the Superman cape on, but that's a time when he should have just become Clark Kent. And,
yeah.
You know, that he just didn't. That was not the right time.
No,
and,
not at all.
And you know, and we're going to talk about the officiating, and I know there's a lot to talk about, but you know, I think it needs to be laid at his feet too. That play, they lost by 3 points. That was 3 points that were just handed to Denver.
Right. Well, and that is a shame to me. The referees turned into the story, at least in overtime there. I mean, a couple of controversial calls. You guys think that was a catch or an interception?
Yeah. Boy, I'll tell you, I thought it was a catch. And I know other people strongly think otherwise, but I'm on the side of a catch. I don't know how in the world. And then, obviously, then they showed, I forget who caught that ball the other night, same type of play. And that was ruled a catch with a different crew. I mean, I know that's a bang bang play, but and it was called an interception on the field, so that's why it wasn't overturned. But to McDermott's point, you know, they had all the time in the world, quoting McDermott, to get that right. They didn't even bother to look at that.
They can't review an overtime, I believe.
No, they can't. The it's a booth can't. Review.
Yeah, yeah. But what, I
so
don't
he called the timeout
yeah,
to try to initiate that.
Yeah, I mean, review that. My gosh.
Look, I'm going to be doing a lot of defending of the NFL's referees.
Shocker.
But I'm not going to defend that because, look, I think that play was so close that if they had ruled it a catch, it was going to stand. If they ruled it an interception, it was going to stand. It's so close. So, you know, we're watching it, and you know, frame by frame by frame, and in real time, it's like, well, did he ever really have it? They rolled through. The defender came out with the ball. That didn't bother me. What bothered me is, to your point, that they should have taken time and looked at it, and then afterwards they hung the you know, the referee out to dry, like the pool reporter's asking him about, what the hell does he know about it?
Yep.
You know what the white hat does? He watches the quarterback to make sure he doesn't get hit after the play. He didn't even see what happened.
No.
So it's like, don't ask him. Yeah. They should be asking the league.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the league should be making a statement about, this is what we saw, this is the procedure, blah, blah, blah. Now, I know a lot of ex-refs and, you know, experts came out and said, look, it was the right call. I have no problem with that. It's not about where they ended up. It's how they ended up there, I think, is really what my issue was.
Well, and then the final drive in overtime featured 53 yards in penalties. And I know the second one, the second pass interference call, I don't have a problem with that one. But you don't get to that point if you don't call the first one. And the first one to me was a little ticky-tacky. You can call that almost every play. It's overtime. I just hate to see it come down to the referees deciding.
This is where I'm going. All right, you've been waiting all week for this. When you say that, you know, if the refs just don't call anything, that if they call it, they're affecting the game. If they don't call it, they're affecting the game. He grabbed his arm. And I'll say this. My criticism of that crew was they let way too much go before that. You want to talk about something that should have been called? There was a clear hold in the end zone. The game should have been over on a safety.
Yes.
A safety. That should have been. Now, nobody wants to see the game end on a safety, but I don't care. The dude held him.
He was like bear hugging him.
It's your job to call the rules.
Yep.
That's it. Now, and the other thing, and I was going to save this for my get lost later, but all of a sudden, we're not calling false starts anymore. There were more false starts and holds this weekend that went uncalled. When in any regular season game, you'll see 6-7. How many holdings did you see called this weekend, guys?
Lot.
I think maybe one
not
in four
lot.
Games.
Not a lot.
Now, they're just letting that go. And I think that's bad. I really, really do. But I didn't have any problem at all with pass interference.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, last night's game, that Miami game, if they would have had that crew, they would have been letting them do anything. Miami, for God's sake, they were manhandling those Indiana receivers, grabbing jerseys literally on every single route. But back to this game, Buffalo could have got a pass interference call to go their way.
Yes, I agree.
It didn't happen.
That was before,
and it was very
overtime.
Similar to the first one. The second one was definitely a pass interference.
Yep.
The first one was very similar to the non-call the Buffalo had. I was sitting there saying, that's pass interference.
Yep.
It didn't call.
Even Darren thought that should have been. I mean, look, they missed stuff. I'm not saying they didn't miss stuff. That happens. But they definitely, the one you're thinking of, we Darren and I both like, yeah, because Darren watches every game, of course, and he's like, that corner gets called for one PI every single game. He's like, that was the one they didn't call it.
All right, well, we spent overtime on that one. Let's try to run through these ones real quick. Seahawks 41, 49ers 6. What comes to mind here, guys?
A beatdown. Just an absolute beatdown.
49ers ran out of gas. I mean, they were punching way above their weight the last half of the season. I think they just ran out of gas. They have nothing to be ashamed of. That was a hell of a run considering how beat up they were. The Seahawks, to use your phrasing, they're a wagon, and they're going to be really tough for the Rams. I mean, I know they've played good games, but I really like the Seahawks position.
And how about them with their rebuild? I mean, they did it so quick, on the fly, aggressive trades. They got rid of Russ. They got rid of DK.
Are the Steelers paying attention?
Yes, this is the formula for the Steelers. They hired the right coach. They drafted well. And they added a veteran cast-off that, honestly, the Steelers could have had, and they passed him up. So hopefully the Steelers take something from this formula. Patriots 28, Texans 16. I'm just going to ask, what happened to C.J. Stroud?
Boy, that was gross.
It's like he forgot how to play football.
Yeah.
And the fact that
he's up for an extension, too. Sorry to interrupt you. Why would they ever think about extending him? I mean, what? Buddy, he looked as bad as anybody in the playoffs.
Is that Jamarcus Russell out
Holy there? Holy heck, man. Just a turnover machine. I mean, look what he did against Pittsburgh, too.
Well, and I blame the coaches more than a little bit. Look, it's on him, right? And everybody knows that. But at the end of the half, I'd yanked him because you could see it in his eyes. You know, I'm not much for body language, but he was, like, completely psyched out. It's like he was starting to, like, just aim his throws rather than let it go. You could see it after that one interception. I'm like, you got to get him out of there. We pull goalies all the time, and it's not like you're saying, oh, you're not our guy. It's like you're not our guy
today. Starting pitching pitcher is just doesn't have it that
And so for the coach to leave him in and take and just keep, it's like the rest of the team's like, well, what's going on here? If I fumbled the ball, I'd be out, you know, next play.
Absolutely.
And he's the first quarterback in NFL history to finish with 5+ interceptions and 5+ fumbles in a single postseason.
But I'll tell you what, if they can figure that defense is what the Steelers defense thinks they are. Yes. That defense is ridiculously good.
I was there at that game. I was obviously, I think it was funny you guys called that I was going to be there too. That's hilarious. But seeing them, we always say when you go to these games, you see the speed in real time. I remember when Ohio State won the Natty, sitting there with my son, like, this team's the best team in college football. This defense flies the ball. Mm-hmm. Watching that Texans defense, it was like they looked like they had a turbo boost on every single play. Their speed, their closing speed was unbelievable.
But I wasn't that impressed with New England, and I really feel like I honestly do. Denver has home field advantage. They haven't played every week. They had the bye. And as long as they have a smart game plan, I think they can keep this game, like, really, really close.
I don't know. I don't know anything about Jarrett Stidham. I don't know.
Darren thinks he's a better passer. He's not a runner at all. He can't move very well. Yeah. But Darren says he might actually be a better passer than Nick's.
Well, he better take his Broncos
Could be a Nick Foles situation.
Yeah, Nick Foles was talking about that.
All right, last one. Rams 20, Bears 17 in overtime.
What a game.
What do we got here, guys?
Caleb Williams is the man.
And take it the way.
Yeah. I mean, that throw he made was one of the greatest throws you'll ever see in NFL history.
50-plus yards, a 14-yard touchdown.
Unreal.
If they win that game, that goes down with the Joe Montana, Dwight Clark catch. But they didn't because – and this is where he's just not quite ready yet because that throw he made, the interception, it's like, dude. Yeah. You can't make that mistake.
Did the receiver stop running on that?
Well, they're
though?
Saying
yeah,
that.
They're blaming DJ Moore.
Yeah.
You know, come on. He was covered, so it's like I think I would have done something else there. But look, I said going into this game that the Bears were a year early. This was all house money for them. Nobody thought they were going to be this good. Next year's the year. Watch out. You know, they're going to have another draft. Yeah. They'll be able to go do some stuff. They've still got him on a rookie contract. This is the time to make some noise.
Well, I got to ask you guys before we go to break, do you go for two after the touchdown to Kmet there, or do you force overtime?
Well,
that's a great question.
I saw a really good defense of not going for two there because it's 50-50 in overtime and it's 46% to get the 2 points. So.
Okay, they were 57% on the season, though.
Well, but their coach had said they'd been nailed all game on those plays, I go with him.
I would have went over to, you know, I'd take the sure thing. Get to overtime, hit reset.
Yeah. All right, it's time to hit reset here. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we're going to talk about the conference finals game and talk about Indiana's national championship. You're listening to Under Review on Under Review. You're listening to Under Review, sponsored by Fatola Eye Care, the Falls Creek Eagles, and Nebraska Plastic Surgery.
let's get back to the action. You're listening to Under Review with Bob Anderson, Dave Glass, and Dave Herzing on Connect FM.
Welcome back to Under Review on Under Review. This segment is sponsored by Fatula Eye Care. Reach out to Dr. Dan and his team for all your eye care needs. Only three games remain, and we're down to four teams. The winners of the two this weekend will represent their conferences in the Super Bowl, in Super Bowl 60. So let's start with the Patriots at the Broncos, 3 p.m. in Denver. Does the Bo Nix injury spoil the fun here, Dave?
Well, it certainly puts a damper on it. I mean, we talked about it a little in the last segment. I just think that the home field advantage is going to keep them in the game. If we were picking against the spread, I would definitely take the Broncos. That's too many points, I think. I mean, that home field advantage is a real thing. I mean, they talked during the broadcast last week about how much Buffalo was, you know, going to the oxygen. They really were having trouble adapting. You know, the Patriots, you know, coming off, that's a long trip across. I maintain that this week is the week that the bye really can help, because the Patriots have just been going at it. Same with the Rams. So, this quarterback situation is a complete unknown. That's the problem. I understand that their running back, they opened his practice window. He might come
Dobbins,
back.
Yeah.
Dobbins. That, mm-hmm. that could make a difference, but... If you make me pick, I'm going to pick the Patriots just because I think May is better. But it's going to be really close, guy. I think it's going to be close.
I honestly hope it is close, just for the sake of good football. It would be fun to see Denver in it, obviously for your son's sake. But I don't see how they win this game. You know, you got a quarterback who's thrust into the biggest spot he's ever going to be in, arguably in his career. Yeah, I mean, New England's playing well. They're not playing that well, like you mentioned in the previous segment. But, yeah, I don't see how it's possible. I always have fun checking out things before coming on here. And AI predicted Seattle and New England overwhelmingly. I forget, it was like 10,000 matchups they ran, and it was like 98% New England.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of hope it is New England. Sorry, Darren. You know, it wouldn't be that much fun to watch Jared Stidham in the
Do you really think it's going to be fun to watch the Patriots?
Well,
it's
going to be fun watching them get smashed.
How many times have we seen the Patriots? I don't need to see the Patriots
anymore. It's a new era, though.
No, whatever.
It's not Tom Brady's era.
No, I can't. You guys aren't nearly grudge-holding enough fans here. I don't want to see New England in the Super Bowl for the next 20 years.
I agree with you there, but it's just, I think it's just too big of a hill to climb. I really do.
Mine might be as much hope as anything.
5.5, though, to me, that spread is a little squirrely. When I heard Nix was, I thought, my God, this is going to be a 10-point spread here.
If the Patriots are home, it would be 10. I mean, that home field is a thing, I'm telling you.
Drake May needs to take care of the ball, though. He did not have a good game the other night. And maybe it's just, you know, the first time he's playing in the playoffs.
They're another team that's ahead of schedule. They got a very favorable, you know, schedule playing the Texans there. If they played an actual quarterback, they might have lost that game.
Oh, no question about it.
Well, the last time the Patriots made the Super Bowl, they played the Rams, 2019. Will it be a repeat? Rams versus Seahawks, 6:30 p.m. in Seattle, D. What do you think?
Not a chance.
That
Seattle team that I watched looks like the best team in the NFL and looks like the Super Bowl winner. Not just because of Lonnie, our buddy Under Review's own Lonnie's Hawks, but I'll tell you right now, that defense is on the dark side, baby. Star Wars reference for all you Star Wars listeners out there. But it's been a lot of fun watching that team this year. I don't see anyone beating them.
I think this is the real Super Bowl.
Yes.
I do think the winner of this game is probably going to win it all. Kind of takes me back to like the 80s and 90s where the NFC game was almost always the title game.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
But I think Seattle's the best team. I've thought that for at least about 8 weeks now, give or take. But I think it's going to be closer than you think. There's two things. Number one, Seattle's running back gone for the year. What was his
name? Charbonnet.
Charbonnet, yeah. And number two, do you trust Darnold? Because I don't trust Darnold.
Not yet.
I mean, all he has to do is not screw up. This team is so good. All he has to do is go like 15 for 25 for 200 yards and one touchdown, no interceptions, and that's a winner. That you tell me that's his line, I say they win. But if he throws three interceptions, that's how they lose.
Yeah, well,
Seattle loses because he does something
right
like that.
Right now, the MVP, he's not playing well. Stafford's not playing really good football. He's actually
he did
not,
what he had to.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But Matt Bears defense was for real.
Yeah, but I just saw this. Seattle's three losses. They were less. It was like a 3-point loss, a 4-point loss, and I'm sorry, 4-point loss, 3-point loss, and 2-point loss.
Oh yeah, they're ridiculous.
So yeah, that team comes to play. I just think right now, just watching them again, the rest of the teams in the NFL, that defense, the way they're clicking, I don't see anybody even really moving the ball on them effectively.
And here's the other thing. I mean, I mentioned this to you guys over text, that Seattle was wanting that overtime to go all night because you've got a Rams team that's not used to being in the cold, playing in the cold. They're in overtime. Now they got to fly back to L.A. Now they got to fly up to Seattle. That is a really big factor to me. I mean, fatigue starts to set in. Seattle's been, 2 weeks ago they were sitting at home, and last week they got to have a home game, not have any travel stuff, and now they're going to be sitting in their living rooms with their families too. Well, so if it was on a neutral field, maybe it'd be closer, but I like Seattle by 10. Yeah.
Well, I'll say this. None of us have been worse at picking games this year than me, but I picked the Rams in the early part of the season. I'm sticking to them here.
You're taking the Rams.
Yeah, a couple of reasons. Wow. Number one, it's a division game. You can throw out all the statistics.
Yeah, they split
all the eye
this
tests.
Year, yep.
Yep, Sean McVay is going to have a game plan for that. And if you look at the two teams and you say, okay, which team has the stars that are going to show up? Give me the Rams there. You got Stafford, you got Nacua, you got Devontae Adams. I'll take those stars over the Seahawks stars. Plus, you got injuries on the Seahawks side. You got the running back, you got the left tackle who's hurt, and Darnold's even banged up. So I'm going to take the Rams. I'm sticking to my gut here.
I'll tell you what, I think that's even a little bit, you know, gutsier than me taking the Broncos in some ways. But, it could easily happen. Turnovers, we know they're the great equalizer. I do want to say, you were mentioning about McVay. I thought he coached terribly for about three quarters. And I'm like, what are you even doing, man? I mean, he wasn't getting Nacua involved.
No,
I was like,
not at
this
all.
Is not a McVay offense. And then, at the end, when they needed it, they did it. But, it was weird.
Yeah, they had one good drive to start the game, and then
they just forgot how to play football, stuck
in the mud. Yeah, well, I'll tell you who didn't forget how to play football, and that was the Indiana Hoosiers. They're national champions. Let me say that again: the Indiana Hoosiers are national champions.
Get a time, a time machine. Go back 48 months, and we say that, and everybody's laughing. Everybody's like, "What are you even talking about?"
I know.
It's insane.
And not only were they the national champions, they were the undefeated national champions, and one of, if not the best team I've seen in the last 25 years.
That team was so disciplined, so well coached. They were really fun to watch. They did everything right. That Mendoza kid is something else, special player, so much fun to watch. There's so many things out there about the Hoosiers and what they were before this. There was a fan who posted a picture of Kurt Cignetti's first game, and he said in the stadium, he said there were less than 5,000 people.
I saw the picture. Yeah. It was empty.
Yeah, there was no one there. I mean, look, fast forward to last night, that was a sea of red. In Miami's home stadium, right? That people were paying $15,000 a ticket. The get-in price for that game was $4,000 to $5,000 for the worst seats in the building.
You know what I'm going to ask, right? Would you have gone?
If it was Penn State?
For $15,000.
Oh, I wouldn't pay
I wanted to know where the line was, don't seem to have too many lines.
No, listen, I will tell you right now, my mother's soul in heaven, when Penn State makes the national title game, I don't care. I'll be there. $4,000, buddy. I've been waiting since I've been a child to see that. Let's go. I'd be there in a heartbeat to see. I wouldn't pay 15.
I love Dee's enthusiasm. He makes up for me. So.
I'll be there in heart with you, Dee. I got to tell you something. It was so much fun to watch those fans. Although next year is going to be difficult for them. They lose a Heisman Trophy winner. They brought in a kid now from Texas. It was Texas Tech or Texas A&M or something. They said, someone in the transfer portal, Mendoza's brother, is now declared he's going somewhere else. It's really hard to catch lightning in a bottle in college football. I mean, NIL has changed it where it's become very much like the NFL, where every year is going to be different than the next.
Well, they were 100-1 to win the national championship at the beginning of the season.
That.
Are they the most unlikely champion that you guys can think of in the history of college football?
My history, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't know about old, but what they did this year, and it's funny. We've all watched enough sports. And again, I don't want to bring it back to Penn State, but I only bring it back because I saw it. when they beat Penn State and that last second play, you said to yourself, this team's like, there's things that have to happen in order for you to be where you are. When all that stuff, when the ball's bouncing your way and everything's clicking, that's when you know it's your time.
There's only two teams that came close to beating them, Miami last night and Penn State earlier this year. Yeah. They steamrolled the rest, I mean, everybody.
Look who they beat to get there.
I know. It was not an easy road.
Unreal. Look, hey, and hats off to Miami. Look at who Miami beat.
Well, and I do want to talk about Miami for a minute because I went and looked at some draft projections and stuff, and I want all of Reuben Bain there is. Yeah. It's like if I had a top five pick, if he drops out of the top five, those people are crazy. Yep. That guy can get after
it. Dude, the motor, buddy. You know, how about Tony? Three-star. 18 years old, he was a three-star.
Crazy. Is he related to the other Tony kid that played for the Chiefs?
I don't know.
You guys remember?
That's actually a good question.
Kadarius Tony.
Well, what? There are no five-stars on that entire Indiana roster to start with.
No.
So that just shows you that coaching does matter, right? I mean, because he took something that the sum was much, much greater than the parts. I mean, the average coach takes that team and they go maybe 8-4, you know?
So, I loved all the IUP references.
Yeah,
and
I was
going to
bring that
IUP. Crimson Hawks, let's go.
Real quick side note, I know we're short on time. We were on our family vacation, and we were on the island of St. Kitts, and we're
jet-setting.
We're looking around at the people who are with us. We're going into a rum-tasting thing, and I say, this guy's got an IUP shirt on. And my wife's like, she's an IUP grad. She's
too.
Hey. And she, of course, my wife being my wife, she'll talk to anybody. She goes over. There's six of them from Indiana. Mm-hmm. We have a bunch of, like, common friends. The next thing I know, they're all drinking. I'm buying them drinks. I'm just watching this happen. And now
That's
Jess
awesome.
Has a new friend for life.
That's
and it's
fantastic.
All because this guy wore an IUP shirt. So, you know, you never know how far away you're going to be. You meet somebody from IUP.
That's pretty cool.
Well, last question for you guys. Is the Big Ten the new SEC?
I certainly hope so. I love the tears of these SEC big shots who are like, they can't be.
It's fantastic. I absolutely love it. The narrative of ESPN has been completely destroyed. Paul Feinbaum.
Paul Feinbaum, get lost.
Feinbaum, you bum, you homer bum.
He's terrible.
But the Big Ten, I mean, hey, but also SEC was 2-8 in bowl games. I realize bowl games are different, but the SEC dominance is gone. 100%.
And the last three national champions have come from a 300-mile radius
Unreal.
In the Midwest. That'll do it for this segment. When we return, we'll talk about the coaching carousel. Are the Steelers really going to hire Mike McCarthy? Under Review is sponsored by Fatula Eye Care. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Under Review Sports Talk. More takes, more talk, more sports. Let's go back to the guys.
Welcome back to Under Review. This segment is brought to you by the Falls Creek Eagles. And I got to tell you guys, you know how much I love to prepare for this show. And these are about the shortest notes I've had in our entire history of Under Review. So we're going to see where this goes here with me being unprepared. But the search for the Steelers' next head coach is underway. And two familiar coaches are interviewing here. The Vikings DC, Brian Flores, who was also the coach in Miami for a year or two. And then former Packers and Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy. These would break the usual mold of the Steelers where they go young, usually in their 30s, kind of an up-and-comer. Do you think these are serious candidates, and are you in favor of going with experience over uncertainty?
I'll give you a sec. I don't want McCarthy. Get out of here. No
Same.
Way. The Steelers need to bring somebody in that knows how to move the ball downfield and develop quarterbacks. End of story. And until they do that, it's going to be the same old in Pittsburgh. I don't want some defensive-minded coach. Those days are gone. You need somebody that has an offensive mindset first.
Well, who would that be, though? Because in this coaching cycle, I'm not sure who's out there.
That's a very fair point.
Yeah.
I mean, unless there's some outlier that no one's heard of.
Yeah, there's no Liam Cullen.
That's a
Ben
very
Johnson.
Fair point.
Yeah, so I think you're going to get a defensive head coach.
Yeah, which I hate to – I have to begrudgingly agree with you, Bob.
Yep.
Well, look, McCarthy, it's not even worth talking about. I don't want old. I don't want retread, really, especially multi-retread like that. I agree 100% that it should be somebody young. I like the fact that they always go off the board and find somebody, you know, who's got really good ideas and is sharp and is fresh. I really don't care as much if it's a defensive mind if if they bring in a wizard offensive coordinator. That's fine. To me, sometimes the head coach calls plays and, you know, like does the McVay thing. But most of the time, I think they're more of a CEO, right? It's the offensive coordinator who's going to have this plan. So I don't care if it's offensive or defensive background. As long as they don't bring an Arthur Smith in to be the offensive coordinator again. Whatever happens here, we have to get into the 21st century with our offensive sets.
Yes, no question. What about Chris Shula?
He's my number one guy.
Yeah.
What about that Kubiak kid? I mean...
I'd take the Shula kid instead. Now, Kubiak, didn't he call plays in New Orleans, mm-hmm. too, for a while? Mm-hmm. So I don't know that he has the greatest track record aside from what's happening this year, but I want either of those Rams guys. So you got Shula on the defensive side, or you have that Shielhaus guy. I'll take either of them. They're both young. They're both from the McVay coaching tree. Shula, he actually has coached every level of the Rams defense.
Oh, wow.
He's produced stars, and he's been there since like 2018. So he's had to learn a few things.
And I don't want to kick on somebody when they're sort of down, because I've always been a Tomlin guy, but Tomlin has no coaching tree.
None.
If you look around, his guys, he didn't make
any
coaches.
James Harris blasted them, which that's crazy.
Does Arians count?
But even at that, I mean, that's like a little bit of a root, right? I mean, I'm not trying to be smart, but some of these guys, you know, Andy Reid's, you know, Walsh has the tree, and then there's, you know, lots of these coaches make other coaches that make, you know, and Tomlin, he just didn't do that. So we're talking about the coaching tree, and I'm like, you know, we've never really had one here in the last 20 years. So I'll tell you, the timing is everything in some of the stuff, but I think all of us realize that the Bears made a fantastic hire last year. We were all really high on Johnson, and man, I wish we could have got somebody like that. And I don't know what else you've got on there. Are we going to talk about that? Speaking of timing, how some of the other coaching openings?
Yep, I got that next.
All right, well, I don't want to steal that.
No, we can jump right into it. How about the Bills? Did they make the right decision getting rid of Sean McDermott?
I think they did. I really do, because you know what? The natives were restless up there. I honestly think if you can't get to the next level with Josh Allen, somebody's got to be the fall guy. And it's certainly, I mean, I get it. They didn't build the right roster around him this year. I completely understand that. But if you can't win with him, you're not going to win with anybody. So I think it was time.
Well, coaches are hired to be fired. I understand that. But I have never, I maybe it's happened. It's probably happened and I don't remember it. But it's not very often that a guy has six straight 11-win seasons and gets the axe. I mean, that just doesn't happen, guys. Yeah. And I think McDermott's a good coach. I think...
Would you want him in Pittsburgh?
He's older. I don't know. Maybe. Probably not. I mean, I really like what Pittsburgh does. Pittsburgh is their own thing. I mean, we're going to probably talk about this, about how there's no tenure in the NFL anymore. I mean, guys are there two or three years and they're gone.
That's actually what I wanted to bring up, Kate, to go back to Tomlin. What now happens with the Steelers? Because again, look at their coaching history. They've, you know, three head coaches. You got Noel.
They're going to do the same thing.
Do you think they're going to keep them that long?
Oh, yeah. That's one of the things I love about the Steelers. I mean, there is a lot to be said for stability.
Yeah.
And I get so tired. Like, didn't the Raiders hired Carroll and he's gone after?
Yeah.
Hey, firing a coach after a year is the stupidest thing ever. He doesn't have time to put in his system.
Nope.
He doesn't have time to get his guys. You don't know what he's actually got. If you wanted him for 1 year, what the hell are you even doing?
Danny Smith, the coach, he found a job with Tampa Bay. Did you see that?
No, yeah, so, I didn't.
Yeah, be chomping his gum.
I hope
down
they have
Tampa.
A lot of gum down there. Right.
But my real question was, in terms of timing, if you're John Harbaugh. And the Giants opening came up and, you know, he got fired. And he took that right away. If he knew the Bills job was going to open up, do you think he'd have waited? I think he'd have waited.
I think
he would have gone to Buffalo. I think right now he's like, oh,
I do think the Giants job's a good job.
It's a good job.
Yeah. But it's not the Bills job.
He could be in the Super Bowl next year with the Bills. He ain't going to be in the Super Bowl next year
and
with
I'll
the Giants.
And I'll tell you something else, too, the pressure. He had no pressure in Baltimore. He's going to have tons of pressure in New York, even though, I mean, it's the Giants. They've been abysmal for some time, although they've won Super Bowls when Manning was there and Sims, so they have some history. But, like, the pressure you're going to have in Buffalo versus the pressure you're going to have in upstate New York, pressure is not, or actually it's in New Jersey, but New York pressure.
Well, anything else on the coaching search? And we'll turn to baseball here, if not.
Just at 10 openings? I mean, I do want to highlight
like a third of the league.
I do want to highlight the fact that Vrabel's been there just over a year, and he's the most tenured coach in the East, and that Zach Taylor is number two in the AFC and number four overall for Cincy. They're just no tenure at all. When Reed retires, everybody in the AFC is going to basically be either new or should have been fired.
And how long is Reed going to be there?
Probably another year or two at most, I think. I'm actually shocked he didn't go this year.
Yeah. And how about Zach Taylor is the only one that survived
in
the AFC North?
Did That's crazy. You know what? That is, and I don't really have anything against him, but that's just how cheap their owners are. They will not. It's like the Pirates. They don't want to pay him to go away.
All right. Well, I'll tell you who will pay for pretty much anything. And
they have my mentality.
Yeah, the Dodgers. If D was a GM, he would be the Dodgers.
I'd be all in every year.
Yep. They signed Kyle Tucker to a 4-year, $240 million contract. This, to me, is like the... I mean, there's so many straws that break the camel's back, but... Is this the one that's finally going to ruin baseball and lead to the lockout? Yes.
People would say there's going to be ruined baseball for 100 years.
There's going to be a lockout.
Yeah.
I mean, there's...
I mean, that might be the only thing that saves
the
baseball.
The Athletic actually had an article that was saying now this was it. This was basically like the Dodgers are just like, to the rest of the league. But here's the thing. Like I was texting you guys before. I'm not upset with the Dodgers. Look, I love... Considering we root for the most abysmal... team in all of Major League Baseball and an ownership group that doesn't give one crap about actually investing and winning. The Dodgers are the absolute opposite of that. I love a team that is like, we're going to put a winner out there. And hey, the Mets are trying to do the same thing, but they're not winning. The Dodgers are. Look, you can't fault the Dodgers. They're playing within the rules of the system, but the rules need to change. There needs to be a salary cap and a salary floor.
The floor is more important.
Couldn't agree more. And until that happens, baseball is going to be broken. Like, the odds for the Dodgers to win the World Series might as well be minus 2 million because how do they not win the World Series?
Well, baseball isn't like football where it's, and we've talked about that, the outcome isn't as deterministic. So like if a good baseball team plays a bad baseball team, the bad one's going to win 40% of the time. Yeah. So they're not going to win every World Series just because, you know, the playoffs are almost like the cap in some ways. But having said that, the last thing I'm going to do is sit here and cry and listen to a bunch of billionaires cry about their own system that they put in.
Yep.
Okay? They decided that it was okay to have deferred contracts, and now they're crying about it? I mean, get over yourselves. And I'm sick and tired of these quote-unquote small market owners, who are all billionaires, by the way, saying they can't afford it. If you can't afford it, sell the team.
Yep.
There's always another billionaire who wants to, and maybe we'll get one that actually wants to run it like the Dodgers.
Yeah,
I cannot stand this stuff. It's ridiculous. Now, having said that, I do think they need a floor.
And just for the record, the Dodgers paid about double the Pirates' payroll last year in luxury tax.
Oh,
and it's going to be worse this year. All right, that'll do it for this segment. When we return, we'll talk to a lifetime Buffalo Bills fan about the agony of defeat and the state of the team. You're listening to Under Review, sponsored by the False Creek Eagles on Connect FM.
Sounds good.
Let's get back to the action. You're listening to Under Review with Bob Anderson, Dave Glass, and Dave Herzing on Connect FM.
Welcome back to Under Review. This segment is sponsored by Lebraska Plastic Surgery, where they help you look and feel your best. Being a sports fan is a roller coaster ride, and sometimes you ride the highs, other times, most of the time, you endure the lows. One franchise that has endured their fair share of lows is the Buffalo Bills, and this weekend's game was no different. Here to discuss it with us is a longtime Bills fan, referee, and a guy Little League fans know very well around here. Barry Baccia is with us right now. Barry, thanks for joining us.
No problem, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Tell us a little bit about your Bills fandom. How did you become a Bills fan, and when did that start? I know that you go to a lot of games. Tell us about it.
Well, it started, I've been a Bills fan all my life, right? My dad has been a Bills fan forever. He first got season tickets in 1986, Jim Kelly's rookie year. And we went to games periodically before that, but you know, once Kelly got there, and we went to a lot of games then, and he had season tickets all the way up until the Bills decided to bench Doug Flutie for Rob Johnson. He gave them back for a year, and we've had them every year since 2002. So we were there for all the highs of the Super Bowl years. I mean, everybody remembers, you know, the 51-3 of going to the first Super Bowl, and then, of course, what happened wide right there.
Yep.
And I was in the military, so that was actually the last playoff game that I went to during the Super Bowl era. I watched the next three Super Bowls while stationed overseas in Aviano, Italy. But so we've had season tickets for years, and it's just, I mean, our family is all about the Buffalo Bills. It doesn't matter if it's baseball season. When we're down there doing Little League games, the Buffalo Bills always seem to be a topic of discussion with us.
Well, there you see it with your hat on.
I was going to say, there's a reason for that, Barry. It's because you wear the Bills hat all the time.
Absolutely. That's how I'm noticed in Du Bois, the guy with the red Bills.
Yeah, that's for sure. So you're watching the game, and obviously that's a heartbreaker, and we'll talk about the game itself in a moment, but I think most of us thought, well, it's a tough game. Maybe they'll make some coaching changes. They definitely need some roster changes, but I was stunned when I heard that they fired McDermott, and I talked to you briefly, and you were sounded like stunned too. So give us your thoughts on that.
Oh, I was absolutely shocked. I mean, we've got a family group chat that goes around, and I think it was my son down in Delaware who's the one who first sent the first family group text. They just fired McDermott, and it's like, there's no way they got rid of him, right? I'm thinking, if they're getting rid of anybody, they're getting rid of the GM, Brandon Bean, just based on the fact that, you know, they haven't had real good luck in the draft. They didn't get a wide receiver one for Josh this year. I just thought that if anybody was going to go, it was going to be Bean, not McDermott. I actually thought McDermott did a pretty good job this year based on, you know, the injuries they had and things like that. I thought this was one of his best years coaching. And the fact that they let him go, I mean, it's still just, I mean, a lot of us are still in shock that actually happened that way. And, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean, I got a lot of friends of mine who are Bills fans. They're happy about it, but it's one of those things, be careful what you wish for. Because, I mean, he's built a culture up there of not only being good football players, but being good in the community as well. And it's going to be whoever replaces him, it's going to be some tough shoes to fill, that's for sure.
Yeah, we were talking on an earlier segment real briefly, and I'm sure it's happened before, but I can't remember a coach getting fired who'd won 11 games or more 6 years in a row. So that's shocking. But to your point about him having a good year, we talked about this a little bit. I actually felt he outcoached Denver for a large part of the game. I mean, I really liked their game plan, and they really had a good chance to win that except for the turnovers. And you can't really pin that on the coach. Would you agree?
Oh, I agree 100%. And Josh was the first. If you've seen the post-game interview, I mean, Josh Allen, he's never been that emotional in a post-game interview before. He knew he let his team down, right? I mean, he knew that he there's about four or five throws that he'd love to have back. Of course, the fumble at the end of the first half, it's just a guy trying to make a play to put his team in position to do the best he could. He knew he let his team down. He knew he let his coaches down, his fan base down. And you could just tell by the emotion on his face, he took it. I mean, he was the one that said, hey, it's my fault. But you think about it, do you think that he had maybe knew that if they didn't get to the Super Bowl that it was out? I don't know. I mean, that's something now you can sit back and look at and say, why was he so emotional? Other than the fact that he took so much of it on his shoulders, did he kind of know that this could have been a direction they were going as well? So.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. And one other thing I wanted to ask you about, obviously Terry Pegula owns the Bills and he owns the Sabres. And there's been, especially with the Sabres, a lot of turmoil in their front office. And you know, the record streak of not making the playoffs. And I read an article today, basically that Pegula, you know, he doesn't necessarily choose his confidants based on experience, but more like, he's more of a feel guy, and it seems like this Bean has kind of, you know, got, you know, become a confidant, not because of his success, but just because he's like his buddy. So is that what you see, too? I mean, you're much closer to it than we are.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I mean, not only did Bean not get fired, he also got a small promotion. I mean, he's now also the president of football operations. That was all kind of announced the same time with Sean's firing, was the fact that Brandon Bean is going to be the GM plus the president of football operations. So not only did he not get fired, he got kind of a little bit of promotion as well, which was pretty shocking to me as well.
Well, I got to ask you, Barry, because I know that you do some officiating too on the side, and we had this a little bit of a debate earlier in the show, and I want to see which side you come down on.
He is biased, mind
you. Unbiased. Yes. Unbiased,
all
of
right.
course.
How did you feel about the officiating late in that game? I guess let's start with the interception. Do you think that was an interception or a catch?
Well, obviously I'm a little unbiased. Anybody knows that. But in every level of football, whether it's peewee pony of 7-8-year-old kids, 9- and 10-year-old kids, simultaneous possession, the ball goes to the offense. In that case right there, he had a catch. He had a knee down. He had his backside down. Then the ball came out. So hats off for the defender as well for doing that. But I think the big thing, and Dave can attest to this, you know, whether you're calling balls and strikes, whether you're calling hand checks and travels in basketball or whatever, consistency is the big deal, right? So not only did that go against Buffalo the next day, that game, but the next day you see the same exact plays on Devontae Adams. Catches the ball, knee goes down, it gets ripped out, but they said his knee was down. So at what point do you determine that he's down or not? And I think that's what frustrates fans so much, and everybody thinks that it's rigged and fixed and all that kind of stuff now, is there's just no consistency. There's one game it's this way, and the next game it's that way. And, you know, you go back to the Marvin Mims touchdown, I think it was, that, you know, put Denver ahead in the last minute of the game there before Buffalo went down and kicked the game-tying field goal before it went into overtime. If you're looking at the ball moving, that ball clearly moved as well. So, but, I mean, I don't care if you're a Steelers fan, a Cowboys fan. I just think consistency is what they need to get to, and that's really, really what it lacks in the NFL officiating. Well, and with all the replays and all the video cameras, they should be able to get that right. I'm sorry.
Well, I agree with you that they need to work on consistency, and I think you and I will agree that, look, some calls went against you, but you'd have to admit that there was a pretty obvious holding call in the end zone that should have been a safety before, you know, in overtime.
Oh, yeah,
doubt. And they were letting so much stuff go. I mean, there were false starts on Denver. I saw at least one false start on Buffalo. And so that gets back to your consistency. If it's a penalty in the first, it should be a penalty in the fourth. You know, we've been trained that way. So I think that's a very legitimate criticism.
Yeah, and I know that going back to see that hold in the end zone, you know, you've seen that. But, you know, the pass interference they called on Trey White to put him down to the 8-yard line or 6-yard line, and then he threw his helmet. There's no doubt. That's pass interference at every level.
Yep.
No doubt about it.
What about the one before
that, though?
Yeah.
If you look back, I mean, there were times where Buffalo did that to Denver receivers earlier in the game. Denver did it to Buffalo earlier in the game. And again, we're getting back to consistency. You can't start calling stuff for 5 minutes to go in overtime that you have let go the entire game. And Spencer Brown, the offensive lineman from Buffalo, said it best. He goes, I was holding the guy all game. He goes, I didn't get called for holding all game long. And he goes, you can't start calling that stuff late in the game or in crunch time. And it's just, it's like expanding a strike zone in baseball in the seventh and eighth inning, right? I mean,
we talked about it in our earlier segment. I saw less holding called in the NFL in all four games this weekend than I've ever seen in a weekend of NFL games. Normally, there's two or three, four holds called a game. Yeah. I think I remember one in four games. They've just completely put it away.
Yeah, which is fine. Stay that way. Stay consistent the whole time. I'm fine with that, so.
Well, I got one last one for you, Barry, and we really appreciate you doing this. Honestly, we could make you a co-host. He's really good, right, Dave?
Yeah, he's great.
Oh, I love talking to him. This is right up my alley.
Well, the last question is, I know you being a season ticket holder, you spent a lot of time at Highmark Stadium. Now, you know, they're going to be moving over to the new stadium. Just your feelings overall on the switch.
Well, I'm looking forward to the new stadium. We've seen it be built now for the last 3 years. I mean, two years ago, they had a flag in the middle of that parking lot, basically signifying where the 50-yard line of new Highmark Stadium was going to be. So we've been by that place so many times just to see it go, just to see it, you know, being built and things like that. But the old stadium, I mean, it opened the year I was born. I mean, so I grew up in that stadium. You know, we've had great family memories in that stadium. A lot of cheers, a lot of swearing between my dad and I. You know, we've had a lot of good times, a lot of bad times. You know, a lot of real emotional times. I mean, I'll take you back to the game after DeMar Hamlin. That kick return for a touchdown. That first, I mean, it was just crazy how, I mean, you get goosebumps now just thinking about it.
Yeah, I did.
A week before DeMar thing happens on Monday Night Football. Everybody knew about it. For that to happen, that opening kickoff to go back for a touchdown, it was just, you talk about higher powers, boy, I'll tell you, it was just so emotional.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Well, yeah, we had great times there, definitely.
Hey, Barry, thanks so much. We'll be seeing you this summer at the Little League field.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, tell your dad. He'll probably listen to it, but tell him that I said hi, and I can't wait to see him again in July.
Yeah, we will. See you guys. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, that was Barry Baccia, who did a great job there talking a little Bills with us. But it's time to get lost, Dave, and what do you got this week?
Oh, man, there's so much to get lost over. But I'm really going to kind of go along with what Barry said. You know, I want to see more consistency from the officials. I'll defend the pass interference calls, but, you know, we got to call it the same way, not just during the game, but from game to game.
Yeah. I'm going to say hashtag get lost to my $8 bottle of water that we purchased at the PPG Paints Arena.
Those prices are insane.
It's almost like extortion. You're so thirsty. Should I spend $6 for the small one, $8 for the big one?
Well, you know, they're not selling out, not even close. It's like, how about we lower some of those prices? You know, I don't mind paying to get in the door, but I don't want to pay $100 just to eat.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, that'll do it for this week's show. Special thanks to Barry again for joining us. Don't forget to search for Under Review on Spotify. Follow us and leave a review. For Dave and Dave, I'm Bob. We'll catch you next week right here on Connect FM.